Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I am Tyler Metcalf, joined as always by Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how are we doing tonight?
Metcalf, we're back. Another, you know, just another glorious episode with the mad scientist. I'm doing good. I'm just, you know, progressing through the week as always, just counting down the days until basketball is back in our life full swing. How about yourself? How are we doing?
Good. You know, just grinding away. Just still enjoying all of these episodes. It feels right to be going through film, even though it's high school and maybe not the best of schemes and consistent talent or whatever. But I can't emphasize enough how much I love, A, first just scouting these guys, and then B, just getting really prepared for the season. I feel good about it. I'm really excited for this basketball season, and I think we're in for one hell of a year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I know we've said this on a couple of other episodes, but it's funny. I never start this early when it comes to watching film and like evaluating, but I feel like now with No Ceilings and the squad, you guys are all foaming at the mouth in the group chat. I can tell already everyone just can't stop talking about prospects, but it's exciting. I feel the same way. I'm really looking forward to this year because it just seems like I'm going to watch more film probably this year than I could possibly ever dreamed of. So this is going to be a fun one, and this is going to be a heck of a class. I'm really think it's going to live up to the hype, but we haven't really just talked big picture. Are you thinking the 23 class is going to be up there? Are you liking the depth of the incoming freshmen so far? Because I know me and you feel pretty similar about, you know, high school tape. I think some guys on our team like high school tape a little bit more than we are leading on, but I don't know. I'm just pumped about basketball in general. Also just, you know, a lot of stuff about the basketball world's going on right now. And I'm just excited. So what are your thoughts? Let's have a little vent before we get into it.
Yeah, and I think there's extraordinary potential in this class. There are a lot of guys who I need to see important strides in some really important areas for them for me to really consider this, you know, a truly elite class. When I just thinking back on like these recent drafts, like going into it, I thought the Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Scotty Barnes, like I thought that draft was going to be an all-timer going into it. And it's quickly looking like it's headed down that path. Obviously those guys have a long way to go in their careers. But the early returns on that have been incredible. I'm not quite sure that this class gets to that because that's an incredibly high bar, but you know, 10 years from now, if we look back on it, it's like, that was, you know, overall B+, A- draft. That one surprised me, and that if it gets that type of grade, that's a hell of a draft class because that's going to mean that 7 to 10 guys in this class really hit their peak potential, which is a lot. But I also think that it is a possibility for it.
Yeah, we're getting spoiled lately with the draft classes, yeah. And I hope basketball fans and draft maniacs are realizing it as quickly as we are. You know, we just had two absolutely sensational classes, and it's easy to be like, hey, pump the brakes. Not every class is going to be like that. But also, like, you know, the players that are, these guys, these young kids are, you know, becoming mature quicker. I remember Jason Tatum getting drafted, and I was like, gosh, he gives interviews already like he's a 10-year pro in the NBA. So, I mean, guys are getting better. They're getting more athletic. Their skills are getting sharper. It's just kind of a new wave of talent, and the 23 class looks like it's got the potential to really be special too. It's just fascinating now. You know, it used to be just like college and international, and you get like a couple international prospects kind of sprinkled in. Now it's, you know, the G League Ignite, the Overtime Elite, which we're going to talk about. Still have mixed feelings about it. No offense to anyone out there. We love you. And then, you know, now it's college and international, but international, the movement just keeps growing every year. So just a lot of talent from different kind of ballparks, if you want to put it that way. And I'm excited to keep evaluating, because I do think it's kind of a dealer's choice when it comes to like, what prospect are you loving in this class? Yeah. Like, you can fall in love with a lot of guys and think that they should go higher in the top 10. And I think everyone's going to have a case for it.
Yeah. And that's just a testament to, you know, kind of more accessible information across the world and how really smart minds are branching off into different areas, whether it's, you know, the like NBA Africa development program, or they're doing that in Asia and Europe and South America, all of these different routes where it's not just, okay, you have to go to college and stay there for a couple of years and then get drafted. There are different routes that fit different personalities and different temperaments and different skill sets better. And that really, you know, it forces people to get better. And when you're constantly going against this better competition and you're seeing your peers consistently improving, it's, you either improve or you divert into something else. So I think we're just like in a really fascinating time of kind of youth player development and just the athleticism, the understanding of the game, and the versatility across the board, regardless of size, is just really fascinating right now.
Yeah, it's kind of been a you know, I didn't really think about this until you brought it up. It's kind of been a fascinating shift of things. Could get really interesting in a couple of years, because just, you know, there's talent all over the world. Basketball is global. You know, there's Basketball Without Borders camps and leagues overseas and camps overseas, and NBA scouts are always trying to find the talent and keep an eye on them. But now we're seeing guys get, you know, college, there's a lot of teams that are recruiting heavily to get international prospects. We just saw that with Arizona and Tommy Lloyd last year. A lot of other, you know, big time places do that. And now we're seeing that your guys overseas are getting recruited to come play in these developmental leagues. And it's going to be interesting to see if that's kind of a bigger movement when it comes to getting guys from the high school ranks to be like, just come train for the NBA right now. You don't need to go there. But that's kind of the movement we're seeing. I'm still interested to see, you know, 5 years from now, if some of these leagues are still going to be around or still thriving. I think it's very early, but it wouldn't shock me if this is kind of the new movement going forward. What about you? Do you like where we're trending, Metcalf, or are you kind of missing the old school ways? I mean, are you Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino? Like, you just want the old school stuff, or I'm conflicted. So me and you haven't even talked about this topic. So now we're just,
yeah, no, this was unplanned. This is fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, part of me, you know, I'll always have nostalgia for just like the college rivalries and all of that stuff. Even all of this conference realignment, I have mixed feelings on, because, you know, just USC and UCLA being part of the Big Ten, which is, yeah, you know, where ridiculous. I grew up and live in Big Ten country, wouldn't necessarily think of LA, but I get why it's happening. It's all about money. So I get it. It's whatever. So, you know, part of me will always miss that, but there's so much money in college basketball and college sports anyways, where I don't think it's ever going away. And I think just more opportunity is better, and it forces different organizations to improve and adapt and modernize and, you know, get out of their ways that have caused a lot of issues. So I never view competition as a bad thing, regardless of the industry or sport or, you know, school or whatever. I always think it's a good thing, and it forces people to get better. And if they don't, then they're going to stay in the past and, you know, crumble.
Yeah. And I don't mean to sound like a jerk with this next comment, and it's not my intention, but
great prelude.
Yeah, no, but this might rub people the wrong way, and I'm not trying to make it sound like, hey, I'm just throwing some harsh facts, but, you know, some of these guys that are getting recruited by colleges, like, college might not be right for them. Yeah. They just might be like, hey, this isn't me. And yeah, I think now if you're good enough to go train, you could be like, hey, you know, maybe some of these guys need some money. Maybe they need it right away, and they want to just be like, hey, I need money and I want to train right away to get ready for the league. And some of these other leagues are giving them that opportunity to do that while having a good foundation to work on their skills. And I think everyone knows how I feel about like the G League and the G League Ignite, but I'm going to be interested to see how the overtime elite kind of develops their league in the second year, because I think the idea is right. I just am curious about the future execution, but that's all I have to say about that. So,
yeah. Well, and a really important piece in the overtime elite's continued development is Amon Thompson, mm-hmm. who is one of the guys we're talking about today. He is a fascinating prospect and someone who I think is really polarizing, and is kind of a lot of hyperbole gets thrown around with him. And I don't, in the long run, I think it's kind of going to do him a disservice, and because it's going to set expectations at just an absurd level. And there are some big holes in his game. I really like him as a prospect. I think there's a lot there to really fall in love with. But some of the adjectives and descriptions of his game, I think, can be a little misleading. So I'm really excited to kind of dive into his game with you and just see where you're at, because we actually haven't talked about him before this. So big picture, what were kind of your takeaways with Amon Thompson?
The Thompson twins, for anyone listening, that, you know, we're new, me and Metcalf are trying to get better about this. So the Thompson twins are Amon and Asur. Did I say those names right? I'm sorry.
Amon and Asur.
Okay, I'm in preseason mode. The Thompson twins, they were playing with the Overtime Elite last year. Both like 6'6", 6'7", with I think like plus three or plus, yeah, like around 195 with a plus three, plus four wingspan. I think they're about 20 years old. Might be around 20 when they get drafted. I don't know. I don't have the draft date. We're in preseason mode.
They will be older
rookies. Yes, they will be older rookies is what I was trying to get at. But everyone, I'm going to try to be polite in this one, Metcalf. Everyone talks about their athleticism. That's the first thing you're going to hear. And it's well deserved.
Yes.
I think it took me about two or three drives on film, probably anytime I've watched a highlight tape or a quick clip on Twitter on my timeline, where I'm like, yeah, that pops. Yeah. They definitely float through the lane. It looks like they're in slow motion when they're gliding through the air. It's very impressive. And at that size with that bounce and that quickness, like, yeah, I was quickly like, okay, check. They're going to be an elite athlete at the next level. I've heard some horror stories about the shot. I think we'd kind of gotten some of our colleagues at No Ceilings kind of talking to me about it. And I was just like, let me get to my own opinion. But we'll talk about all that specifically, because I know you're a mad scientist and wants to break it down. I liked a lot. I kind of went in there to the whole film dive as a little bit of like, I feel like I'm gonna be a buzzkill when I was watching him. Like, I was like, I feel like I'm gonna be a little negative here, and then I left and I was like, okay, I get it, I get the hype. I really liked a lot in his game. You're a little higher on him than I think you're hinting, or am I reading you wrong? I feel like you were kind of giddy about him, or the twins.
Yeah, so I'm coming into, you know, preseason, he was probably top five for me, and okay. Right now he's like seven, so okay. I still really like him, but, you know, after really focusing in on his stuff again and not just going through the highlights or, you know, kind of watching him in the periphery like while I was watching Barlow or Montero last year, you know, there are some there are some concerning things that I saw that aren't just the shot, and it's more nitpicky. It's nothing detrimental like the shot maybe, but it's little things that he kind of has to clean up and be perfect at if the shot never comes along. So do you want to start with the shot, or where do you want to start?
Yeah, I need to get that one out of the way, because okay. I feel like everyone's going to want to hear the positives. Let's mix this up. I feel like we always start with the positives and end with the negative. Let's start with the negative and then end with the positive. What was your least favorite part of the shot? The shot's not pretty.
No.
And I was trying to be polite, but I'm not a shot doctor. I'm trying to prove this is the one part of my evaluation process that I always am trying and eager to learn more about because I'm fascinated with the really small mechanics. Like I know the basics, but I would love to like have like an elite skill of evaluating like what is specifically wrong. But I think my opinion is I think he's got a very inconsistent lower body. The arch with his shot is all over the place. I feel like I never saw one that was the same, like two in a row. And then his lower body, I feel like he looks like sometimes he's shooting with all arms. He's shooting all upper body. And then sometimes his lower body's moving a different direction. Sometimes his feet are lined up a different way. From coaching and kind of picking a mind of my buddy who's still coaching overseas, he's going to be with Ratio Farm this year. Shout out Jimmy Rhodes. Proud of you. But he kind of taught me about like the importance of not using, how important each part of your body is when it comes to the shot. And from what I've learned from him and kind of what I picked from a couple people overseas when I was there, I feel like when you get problematic with the lower body, that can get ugly. That can lead to more problems than if it's just upper body and the form or you have it too far to your left. If it's all lower body, that can really throw some red flags. So I'll be interested to see how that develops this year because it does feel like everyone has the same opinion. Everyone has the same buzz. If the shot just comes around, and I get it. We've said it before and I hate it. I hate when that's the thing. It's like, well, if the shot just comes around, it's like, well, what are we talking about with the shot? How bad is it? Is he going to shoot 40% maybe from the field or is he just the outside shot? And I don't know how I feel. What about you?
Yeah. So I'm guilty of using the if the shot comes around descriptor on prospects all the time, but usually I try to save that for guys whose mechanics at least look fine. And where it's like, oh, maybe if he just tweaks something small, then we'll see, a 3-4% boost in his jumper. The ones that I really avoided on are the ones where it's going to have to be reworked. And yes. I think that's the issue with Amen's shot because, like you said, it looks different every time. The way the ball comes out of his hand is different on every shot. In those clips that we just ran, he made one and it looked okay, I guess. But one hit the opposite side of the backboard, one fell 2 feet short, one clanged off the side of the rim. It's like none of these are even there's zero consistency in the trajectory of the ball, and that's where it comes down to the mechanics. Again, I just try to pick up little things based on what smarter people say and tell me. And I think what you pointed out about the feet was really important. There are some where his feet are outside of his shoulders, there are some where it's really narrow. He kind of gets like this jackknife at the hips where he's almost like bent over and then releasing out in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a mess. And I don't even care really so much about what percent he shoots next year. I just want to see if he can show consistent mechanics at all. And if the mechanics have improved and are repeatable and we see them consistently, I'm fine if he still shoots 20%. But if he can show us a full season of consistent mechanics that look cleaner and smoother and less robotic, then it's like, okay, maybe you now have the foundation of something to rep out and work with and then improve on. The other thing I really worry about is I didn't think he had any touch. And I thought that showed up in his at rim stuff too. We'll get to that in a minute, but whether it's from three, whether it's on floaters, on layups, I thought his touch was pretty rough.
It's becoming alarming how much like me and you see eye to eye with some of this stuff. And I'm not just saying this, like we texted about previous episode guys. I feel like we and you had a little bit of interaction because I'm also not wanting to spoil it. I want to hear what you say live on the air because it's good content. We do podcasts, folks. But we didn't talk at all about these two guys. And the one thing I had was like, I think a lot of people are going to be saying he's a good finisher because of how explosive and like the slams and he's got some creativity. But then I was watching more and I was like, I don't love the touch. I was like, there's a lot of touch stuff that needs to get worked on. I was like, even if he had some creative finishes, I was like, that didn't look as smooth or look like it had touch. It was kind of rushed. And I think that's a big thing he's going to have to just work on. I'm not saying it's horrendous. I just think it needs a lot of work.
Yes.
Everyone that knows Stanley's will probably back me up when I say this too. I have to say that I usually am not good at being like, oh yeah, I know what I'm talking about. So like when I'm talking about the shot, I understand the areas that need to be consistent and good. I just wish I could be watching film and literally see from like the zoomed out, like, oh, his thumb is too far to like, I wish I had that eye. So
the people that do that amaze me.
I'm jealous of when they can do that. I'm like, man, that's the one thing I need. I need that ability to like, I'm always like, can someone just spend an off season with me and be like, look, this is what you have to look for. Cause then I'd be like, okay, I could pick that up. But I feel like if there was a weakness of mine, I'd be like, yeah, I wish I had like the eagle eye of watching what's wrong with a shooting touch from my couch. But that's also why we go to see him in person, folks. I agree with you with this shot. When you're shooting, you want to shoot on the way up. And I feel like sometimes a shot that he would shoot on the way down. Sometimes it was too early on the way up and it was like line drive. Then it was a lot of tut or a lot of art. And then it was like you're saying, it was like sometimes I was like, oh, that looked good. And it hit like the backboard and nothing else. Yeah. And I was like, my gosh, it's like playing 2K for the first time and you hold the shoot button too long. It's just kind of, it's a little wild, but everything else I loved.
So final thing with the shot. Yeah. Do you think that it can be tweaked and improved on, or do you think that it just needs to be completely overhauled? And if he ever develops a league average shot, is like a flip of the coin.
Oh man, I the problem is like I was watching and I was like, I don't know if this is a repetition thing or if he's just.
I don't think it is. I think it needs like a full overhaul. Sorry to answer my own question there.
No. I like when you do that. That's good. I think it needs overhaul. The problem also is like you have to find out what's going on behind the scenes because there could be too many chefs in the kitchen that are poking at him. I think don't quote me on this, but I think Avdija had the same thing overseas. I think he had a lot of guys that were trying to tweak with the shot, and then finally at the end, it was all of a sudden taking steps in the right direction right before the draft, and everyone was like, oh, he can shoot now? And it's like, it's a loading process, but I think it might need a little bit of an overhaul, or he just needs to get someone that's like, all right, like me and you are on the same page and we're going to figure this out. Like nobody else is going to mess with this, but here's my question for you, Metcalf. The shot doesn't come around. Is he a top 10 pick right now? It's tough because I'm the whole time I'm watching him. I'm like,
I don't know.
Why can't I get Ben Simmons out of my head? I was like, athletic Ben Simmons is in my head. And I'm like,
I'd probably lean no because I think he does. I think he could be exceptional in pretty much everything else. But, you know, I'm not saying you have to be an elite shooter to play in the league, but you have to show at least a little bit of ability or willingness to shoot from outside. And if nothing changes with his shot, guys are just going to be able to defend him and sit in the paint and double everyone else. I'm going to lean no, but it would be really tough to pass on.
You know what's fascinating that I just thought of? We just did the Jairus Walker episode. We did the Whitmore episode. We all had these same kind of conversations of being like, hey, like they look like they have the tools, but if that shot comes around, and with Walker, I feel like me and you were like, he does a lot of stuff and that shot is respectable enough that he could still be an easy top 10 pick. But with Thompson, it's like, it is so much of a like, oh boy.
Yeah, but I don't know. But that's also where like the positional differences kind of come
right, into right, play right.
Because
and absolutely
to be a 6'6", 6'7" wing, yes. you can't be a complete non-shooter.
Right. I completely agree.
If you're not a reliable shooter as a versatile ball handling playmaking power forward who can defend multiple positions, that's different. You're able to kind of hide or use your talents in different ways because you're setting screens, you're crashing the offensive glass. You're not out on the perimeter the entire time and just being left alone and allowing everyone else on the team to be doubled basically whenever. So I think that's where kind of the positional stuff, that's when that actually kind of factors in.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And that's why it's just really fascinating with Amanda, especially like, I really do like a lot of their game. Like I didn't want to sound negative. So now everyone's listening and they're like, oh, they just ragged on this guy. So let's get positive.
Let's get into the fun stuff. I know we're a little hesitant about his touch finishing, but there's a lot to love with his scoring. I thought his ball handling was really impressive. The burst, the deceleration. I thought he finished through contact a good amount. Just the swiftness of his, you know, crossovers, his in and out, his second jump. It's all a lot of fun and really impressive.
There's a lot of creativity with his game that I was very, very wowed about. His second jump was ridiculous. One time, the clip you just showed for everyone listening, he like throws up a runner in the lane. And I swear before he even landed, he was already jumping again. I was like, did he even like actually fall to the ground or did he just like stay up there? But you know, you brought up that his handles are very impressive, but I also think he's going to need to get it a lot tighter. But like he had some instances where it was like in and out and showing some hesitations where I was like, oh gosh, no one can stay in front of you with that. Cause his first step's really strong. He can get downhill very fast. And then when he does, he just floats through the lane. But he's going to get, he needs that handle to get, it can get loose. It can get wide. And I feel like sometimes it's like basic stuff where he just loses it. And I'm like, okay, I think that'll be tuned up pretty quickly. Go ahead.
Yeah. I thought when he got into the lane, I thought he did a pretty good job of securing it and kind of, you know, avoiding contact and, you know, getting it up into the rim is when he was on the perimeter where he would just kind of like turn off for a second and it'd just be like really lazy turnovers or guys are just easily picking his pocket because it's like he's tuning out for, you know, or he's just having a brain fart for a second and guys are just like, oh, okay, thank you. And it's like, okay, is that because you're just bored and like the competition level is not where it should be for someone of his potential? Or is that like is it a bigger picture?
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny to do this in the preseason because as much as I think I'm getting like a good feel for these guys, I also feel like I'm creating more questions and headaches. So it's like, oh man, like because I was just kept watching him. I was like, gosh, he does a lot of things really damn impressive. But and then just go back to that shot and you're like, man. And every time someone's always like, oh, the shot's horrendous, I'm like, it can't be that bad. But Metcalf, it's not even just like a three-point shooter. Like the free throw line, it's bullets. You know, it's just no touch. It just looks like he'll go from bullets to threes to bullets to free throws. But the 3 points, like bullet or high arcing. And it's like, you can't. I don't know. So now I'm too fascinated. Well, see,
now you're circling back to the negative.
I know, and I don't want to be. So we can't do that. We have to start positive.
Yeah. So So yes, he is a one level scorer right now, but I think that one level is really impressive. I expect him to get a little stronger this year. And with that, I think his ability to finish through contact should even improve. But besides the at rim scoring, I was really impressed by his passing.
I was too.
I thought he was really creative. There were some plays where he just made really poor decisions, where his brain turned off for a second. It's just really lazy turnovers. But generally, I thought he utilized his ability to pressure the rim really well to create for others from really fascinating angles.
There's a lot of like, holy crap, what a great play moments. Like kind of you're sitting on the couch and I find myself just yelling like, nice pass. You know, like it's the classic Jay Billis every time he's doing a broadcast, you just nice pass. Like I laugh every time Billis does that. That and when he says bottoms up, when someone says wingspan during the draft broadcast. But with Thompson, it was a lot of beautiful looks. I think when you... Gosh, I'm not trying to be negative. I think when you know you're a good passer, you get automatically careless. Like when you know you have elite vision and you can see passing angles, you can get way too aggressive with some looks and a little erratic. Mm-hmm. And like some of those that you showed and what you're hinting at is like, I think he was expecting like, oh, I know exactly where this is wide open. And it's like, no, you can't make that pass until you see it. A lot of passes he makes, he's throwing guys open.
Yeah.
But there's also some that he's got to realize, like, no, you have to wait for that window to completely get open. Just because it's almost there, you got to get the timing completely down. And there's just some that he's just trying to get too creative, too flashy. It reminded me a lot of, like, LaMelo's film overseas in the NBL. Just some plays are absolutely gorgeous. And in some plays you're just like, okay, it's doing a little too much, but you got to take both sides of the, you know, equation. It's like, well, he had five absolutely gorgeous passes and he had errant passer too. But you know, that's also what happens sometimes with really good playmakers is sometimes it just turnovers can go high. But also, like, just because you're a flashy passer doesn't mean you're automatically a good, you know, playmaker.
Yeah. So, and do you think he has the potential to potentially be that, like a point guard almost? Or do you not think it's quite there?
I feel like there's a long way to go. But you can tell me I'm wrong. Are you thinking that it's that? I feel like he's more of a little bit of like a complimentary guard, because it's hard to, I mean, I know I talked about Ben Simmons earlier, but it's hard to sell a team on like, hey, this is our primary guard and he's not going to be a threat from outside. I don't know. And I'm a big Rajon Rondo guy, but it's just like you eventually run out of, I don't know Metcalf, I don't know.
No,
I
tend to agree with you where I think he's still a little too careless, still a little too just kind of going through the motions on it. Obviously, this is going to be a huge year for him, and I would like to see a little more consistency with the effort, the conditioning, the, being really locked in from start to finish. And if he shows that, you know, maybe down the road, there's some potential for that. But I think it is more of a complementary playmaker, secondary, tertiary guy who's, you know, attacking rotations and running in transition and creating for others based on the pressure that he's putting on the rim and forcing rotations. That's kind of where I like him more than necessarily initiating the offense.
There is potential for him to answer all of these doubts very quickly with us. Like there's that he's got enough skills that pop and really get me like excited that if the shot looks any bit better, I'm like you, I can be okay evaluating a guy. And if his outside percentage is low, but it's consistent, I'll be okay. Like if it looks like, hey, shot low 30s, but he's consistent and looks like it just needs a little bit of tweaking, I'm all right. I'm going to be fine with that. So if he goes up this year and it takes the jump, but it's under 40%, but hey, it looks like the mechanics are way better, I'm going to be like, yeah, all right, I'm in. Let's do this. Yeah. Like, but that's the big one he's got to answer. And then everything else looks like he gets some fine tuning, but the playmaking really, really did impress me. Like there's just some passes that guys, you can't really teach that stuff. Like it's just vision, anticipation at the same time, and just seeing windows that are really tight squeezes. And that's definitely one of those, like, oh gosh, like I saw the shot and I was like, oh boy, it was exactly what everyone was telling me. And then all of a sudden he made a couple passes and I was like, all right, I might be in. There we go. So.
Yeah. So let's finish up with talking about his defense. Some guys on the No Ceilings team had some harsh things to say about the defense a couple weeks ago. Oh, I don't remember
that. Amazing that. Okay. What did you think? Hit me with it.
Kind of a common theme with some of these guys we've talked about, where I thought he was extraordinary in isolation. His athleticism, his footwork was all really impressive. I thought he gambled a lot on some stuff. I thought he died on screens a ton. Really good defensive playmaker with jumping kind of passing lanes, dribble handoff right here that he takes the other way, chase down blocks, weak side blocks. But a lot of it was because he was ball watching like crazy. And when he was off ball, he was solely focused on the ball and would miss rotations, but has the athleticism obviously to kind of compensate for that. The screen navigation I thought was horrible. But generally,
tell us how you really feel, Metcalf.
He just died on it. It was just a lack of effort, where he would hit a screen and then just be like, "Yeah, okay, whatever." But when a guy attacked him, I thought his footwork and balance and strength and quickness was all incredibly impressive, which gives me a lot of hope for the defender that he actually is, and that a lot of it was kind of more conditioning and effort based.
I really liked his feet. I thought when I watched his feet, I had the same things. I was like, this is going to, this is not a know-it-all comment, but this is a good warning for everyone out there. When you watch a guy on tape and he just keeps making all these splashy rejections and steals, don't just think that automatically means he's a good defender.
Yeah.
Because he has a lot of plays that are very, very impressive. I mean, I'm even going back. I've watched some of the TBT film. He had a great defensive sequence like down the final stretch of the game, and it was awesome. But he makes up for a lot of stuff with his athleticism. But then, like you said, Metcalf, when people drive on him, I was like, oh, okay, he's got some really good potential. The feet. I'm a sucker for footwork. So anytime a guy's driving on someone, I'm like, I'm watching feet only. I'm going to just be like, okay, does he have the tools to kind of switch and open up and cut guys off and work to cut off the second attempt and stuff like that? I think he's got it, and he's got the length, and he shows the potential to be coached. It's just now you got to learn the rest of the game defensively. And I'll be interested to see if that's going to be this year at the overtime elite level, or if that's going to have to be at the next level with NBA coaches, because it's tough. I'm not trying to sound like an asshole here. Sorry for everyone for swearing. It's tough to watch those games because the Thompson twins are going to be they look like Vince Carter out there. Yeah. Compared to everybody else. And I know they're going to have a lot more talent probably in this league this year, but I mean, they go by some guys with relative ease and you're like, oh my gosh, it looks like Russell Westbrook in his prime going against a JV high school team. Like it's just ridiculous. So we'll see this year if they turn it up another notch, but I really, really like what I saw from him, especially defensively. There's some tools, but the screen navigation, like you said, a little bit of a rough patch, Metcalf.
So just with this being his last year at OTE, what do you want to see from him? Obviously, him shooting 45% from three would be the dream, but neither of us think that's realistic. So I'm not talking about major overhauls to his game or anything like that, but little things. What would you like to see him improve upon that would make you feel more comfortable? Like, oh God, this could be a top five guy.
I would like some touch. I don't need him to shoot lights out from 3-point range, but if he just tried to look like he had a mid-level game developing, where it was like he's trying to get floaters in the lane, he's trying to pull up and get jumpers from the elbow, he's trying to finish with some touch, you know, where it's reverses or off the glass and stuff. And I'm not saying he doesn't do that at all, but you need to see more of it.
Yeah.
I get it. He can drive down the lane and dunk. Like, I get it. And it's awesome. And he's vicious and he's special. And, you know, like sometimes I'm holding my chair every time he's driving down the lane. I get it. It's awesome. But if you're going to go from that league to the NBA next year and be a guy, you need to have more in your bag. You need to have more tools in the shed. And if you're not going to have a big one, which is the outside shot, you better start figuring out the mid, you know, the in-between game. Because he has the playmaking to be really special. He has sensational vision. He looks like he's got some potential defensively. But offensively, if you want to get minutes, even as a rookie, you're going to have to, you know, be able to help in a number of different areas. What about you?
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. Just a little more versatility to his scoring that's not just at the rim would be awesome. A big thing for me would just be consistent effort throughout the game, where I don't know if it was like a conditioning thing, but he looked tired late in games a lot. He kind of looked like he was just going through the motions for stretches of the game. You know, we saw with some of those turnovers where he's just passing it straight to a defender, or a guy who's 6 inches shorter than him is just taking the ball, you know, like it's nothing from him. And those are just mental lapses. So I just want to see him really fully locked in. And I want to see him dominate this fucking league next year, where him and his brother are the best players by a lot in that league next year. And, you know, I personally don't think – I was a little disappointed when they said they were going back there, because I didn't think it was necessarily the best developmental spot for them. But I need to see them dominate from start to finish of games. If they start going through the motions and just coasting and resting on their athleticism for long stretches, I'm going to be – I don't know about concerned, but – probably annoyed. And you know, it's like these aren't 18-year-old rookies. These guys are going to be a little bit older when they're drafted, and obviously we're not ageist or anything like that, but they are on different timelines. So I need to see some more consistent intensity and just kind of refinement of little things like the screen navigation, decision making, and just the general focus.
I mean, I'm right there with you. I feel like there's no reason why there shouldn't be some damn video that comes across, you know, my plate on a work day that's like, hey, did you hear the Thompson twins? They each had 40 in a game. Yeah. Like, just they need to have those type of games where it's just like, okay, what are they doing here? You know, they just need to be putting up cuckoo numbers, because it's like they should be. They're going to be that age. And I agree with you, Metcalf. I completely do. I've agreed with you more this preseason than I ever have. So
I hate it. We need games back so we can start fighting a little more.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. So let's move on to Chris Livingston, who I thought was really interesting. So he's 6'6", 220-pound wing going to Kentucky from Oak Hill. What were your kind of just initial thoughts with him?
I'm very intrigued. Very. I was not expecting it going into that. And then I kind of left and I was like, can I skip the pod and just watch 5 more hours? It really was like, the more I watched every clip, I was like, I'm liking more and more. And I feel like when I watched one of the All-Star games he was in, or whatever. They're all a blur to me. So I'm sorry for everyone listening, but like the McDonald's, the Hoop Summit, all of them are a big blur. And then the Jordan Classic, whatever. I feel like he popped a couple times, but I was like, eh. And then I started watching his film and I was like, whoa. It was just like every play like he made, it was like either a great finish, a great pass, a great. Then I saw the shot and I was like, okay, the shot looks kind of promising. Because then you see the stats and you're like, I think he was like high school, he was like 20 something or 30% from three. And I was like, uh-oh. Yeah. And then I watched the shot and I was like, wait, okay, that doesn't look terrible. It looks solid. Like it looks like it could be improving. And then like he kept hitting a couple. I was like, all right. I started was like, is this going to be a draft crush of mine? Like I started getting excited and then I stopped watching. I was like, I kind of want to watch some more films. So I liked them. Metcalf, I was very intrigued. What about you?
I was kind of cool on him when I first started watching. And I honestly didn't know what to expect going into this film because I had basically zero exposure to him. So it was completely new for me. My, you know, kind of assumptions were, okay, 6'6 wing going to Kentucky, you know, five-star recruit. Okay, he's going to be a ball dominant scorer, you know, creator. He's going to be doing a lot of that stuff. And then he wasn't. And it's like, okay, wait, I need to kind of reimagine and repicture the type of player he's going to be. And then once I started thinking about him as more of an off-ball scorer and, you know, kind of complementary piece, it's like, oh, okay, there's a lot to really like here where I'm not sure that he's ever going to be, you know, the guy, but I think he could really be a guy. And I mean, that as a compliment. I think he could be a really high level starter role player down the road. And I thought there was a lot to kind of like the more I watched. I think going to Kentucky and playing with a point guard and a system that sets him up a little better and kind of creates opportunities for him a little easier and gives him a little more space is going to do wonders for his game. Because there was very little of that at Oak Hill.
You know, this is why you just brought up a point. And the moment you said it, I said to myself, I said, that's exactly why I'm going to fall in love with him. I have a weakness for these guys because I think you NBA teams have to find them because it's not the superstar, but you need this piece to help everyone else be better. And this is why I liked Mikal Bridges so much and like why I like the Suns getting him and guys like that. And I'm not saying Livingston's the same type of player, but I'm saying I think this is the glue guy you think of. This is the missing piece of the puzzle that all of a sudden makes life for everyone easier and just is a damn good basketball player. And that's the vibes I got watching him. I was just like, he can do a lot. He can do a lot of stuff that really can help you in a different way, where it was either a defensive rebound and throwing a gorgeous pass up the floor for an easy bucket or making the extra pass or hitting the wide open shot. It was just like, it looked like a guy that I had the same first. It's funny how that works, isn't it, Metcalf? I had the first reaction was, oh, 6'6", going to Kentucky. He's probably just going to jack a ton of shots. And then all of a sudden I started watching and I was like, I need to get rid of that idea. I was just like, I really like how he plays. He just looks like a guy that, you know, is going to get you a lot of good shots. You are going to love playing with Chris Livingston. That's what I got from watching him. I was like, whoever's playing with him at Kentucky is going to love playing alongside him. And then, you know, I'm excited to talk about Case Wallace with you one day because I'm really starting to get a draft crush on him. But Livingston just seemed like a guy that the more I watched, the more I was like, this is going to be a guy scouts and front offices are going to be drooling over because people are going to think he's like, oh, he should go 28th or something. And then all of a sudden teams are going to be like, you kidding me? He's not passing 16. Like, you know, just every team wants this guy that's potentially low maintenance and helps you in a number of ways.
Yeah. And I kind of got some Cam Whitmore vibes from him with his passing, his ability to really pressure the rim and how effective he looked getting downhill. You know, when we talk about his scoring, I loved him in transition. I thought his straight line speed was really impressive. He's really strong when he attacks the rim, finishes through contact. he didn't shoot a ton off the dribble, but some of the mid-range jumpers that he had were really nice. He had good balance on it. It looked like something that he had practiced a lot and was something that he's trying to incorporate into his game, which I like. And the mechanics on it were pretty similar to what his three-point was. I know the three-point percentage isn't, you know, eye-popping, but the fact that the mechanics are as good as they are, how the touch in the mid-range and at the rim is as soft as it was, I think in the long term, he's going to be at least, you know, an average shooter.
I really, really liked him in traffic because when you're not going to be the fastest guy, you got to learn how to play. You got to learn how to be quick with your top speed, like if that makes sense. And he was just slithery, and I thought in and out of his top speed, he didn't lose a lot. Like when he kept changing directions, I thought he maintained the top speed, and he's physical. He wasn't afraid to go into people's bodies. He understood how to defend himself on the attack and like kind of in the midair and adjusted his body. I just thought he was smooth, slippery, and like you said, in transition, he was great. He knew exactly where to go and he knew how to counter it. And the shot I really did was like, this looks good. This looks like it is going the right way. So I'm very intrigued with his skill set. I know the percentages aren't great, and you know, but this is what we were just talking about. Like the consistency at least looks like there. It's just going to need more reps, and he's just going to have to keep plugging away at it. And yes, Calipari is very good at getting guys prepared and ready to go to the next level. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen with him going to Kentucky. It's like, you know, you're seeing him right now at Oak Hill, and you know, if you watch him on tape at a high school, you're going to get intrigued. And this is a guy that I just really, really liked a lot of stuff. It's the classic. He doesn't do anything at the elite level, but he looks like he does a ton of really good stuff. And that's kind of one of those players that I always think needs to get valued higher. It's because just because they're not going to be a potential 6-time All-Star doesn't mean they might not play 12 years in the NBA. And I just really, really liked his game. I was like, whoa, I completely predicted this one wrong. And I was also like, when was the last time Kentucky got a guy like that? It was just like kind of a weird, like, oh, okay. Like I'm in now for Kentucky. I'm in. Besides Shibway this year, now I really have a reason to watch Kentucky.
You mean you weren't all aboard the Sevier Wheeler bandwagon?
Oh yeah, of course. My favorite thing. No,
okay, so I apologize to Sevier Wheeler. That was a completely unnecessary drive-by.
Come on. And if you want to come on the pod, we're welcome to have you on.
So how did you feel about his defense? Because I didn't know how to necessarily come away from it. I had a lot of mixed feelings. I absolutely despise that they played 2-3 zone almost the entire fucking time, and they're a bunch of cowards, and zone defense should be outlawed. But that's a different conversation.
Yeah, I don't know. The zone kind of bothers me. I feel like I need to watch way more, because that's the annoying part of evaluating, is when it's zone, you're just like, oh, this just means that I'm probably going to have to watch twice as much just to get little breadcrumbs. What did you think? What did you think?
I thought there were a couple promising flashes of like on ball, like footwork and strength and that kind of stuff. I thought he was pretty rough on closeouts. Those were typically out of control, and he would just fly by and, you know, simple shot fake would send him the other direction. And then it just kind of seemed like he ball watched a lot and would try to gamble on jumping passing lanes a lot. So I didn't love his team defense, but you know, it's like you said, with like that fucking zone defense, it's so hard to get a gauge on how good these guys are as defenders, because different zones ask guys to, so depending on the team, you can be playing the same position, but being asked to do a completely different thing.
Right.
And it's without, you know, intimate knowledge of what their direction is, it's a little hard to kind of really gauge how well they are. But typically with his, just his body positioning, it was mostly fully focused on the ball and not necessarily what was happening on the weak side with him. And that would lead to him being a step late on jumping passing lanes, which would then, you know, lead to wide open shots or easy drives, or being just out of position and scrambling for a closeout that would result in nothing good. So I thought there was some potential there as like an individual on-ball defender, but the team defense, the off-ball defense, left me a little underwhelmed.
Yeah, I was more intrigued and excited to kind of hear what you thought about the defense. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to get off of the podcast and probably like turn it back on, because I really did like his film in it. And I just hate zone film. Like, I'm not just making it up. I hated zone film watching, you know, Jaden McDaniels at Washington. Yeah, and
oh God, I hate that zone to begin
with. Steibel and Isaiah Stewart at UW. Like, it drove me crazy. And like anyone, it's just, oh gosh, don't even get me started on Syracuse film. I mean, I literally.
Cowards.
You know. I'd rather be like dealing with a saw puzzle from the movie than having to watch Syracuse defensive film.
But I bet the Predator is a big fan of zone defense.
No, McCaff, enough of the Predator talk. Mid-Predator slander is not required.
Coward.
No, but I like Livingston. He's one of those guys that you start making your preseason rankings. And I was like, I feel like I might move him a little higher than a lot of people might have him, but it's just because I'm sort of believing in the, hype of he's going to get drafted higher than his production. Does that make sense?
Like underdrafted, like he should have gone earlier than he ends up going.
I could see front offices liking his skill set.
Like, oh, say, okay. Like he'll average like 6 points, 2 rebounds, and an assist, and then go like in the teens. And he'll be guy with that production?
I'm not even saying that, but maybe he averages 12, sure, 5, and 5. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, he might average 12 points a game, but go in the teens, and everyone's like, well, he didn't, you know, but right. I just think he's an intriguing skill. But hey, let me watch some more film on him. What else you got for me? This has been a good one.
Yeah,
I'm a little nervous because I feel like these were wild cards, but I like this one.
So we gotta check in with the green room. So.
Yeah, green room. We got some love about the green room segment. So shout out to that. Shout out to Stephen Gillespie too. He's probably listening because I feel like he listens at like 3 a.m. But Stephen, welcome back. You know, thank you for your service.
We missed you. So just for listeners who have missed any of our previous episodes, the Green Room, most exclusive club in the country, in the world, sorry, currently contains Victor Wembanyama, Derek Whitehead, Jairus Walker, Scoot Henderson, Cam Whitmore. So, Amen Thompson, in or out?
I don't know. I'm in, I guess.
You in?
Yeah, I guess he's in. If he takes a shot at the bar, gives him. I can't even get that dad joke out.
He's purely just sipping on a beer. He's not taking.
Oh God. No, I was just gonna say, if he took an outside shot,
he's just accidentally throwing it over his shoulder.
No, but he's good. I like the Thompson. Yeah, he's in.
They're in. I agree. I think there's too much to his game. Right now, obviously this could change if the shot even regresses or if we don't see the improvements in the kind of ancillary areas that we mentioned earlier, maybe that changes. But I think right now the raw athleticism, the raw potential, just the current skill set, I kind of think he has to be in.
Yeah. The Thompson twins are originally they were born in Oakland too. So I got to give a shout out to the town. So there you go. Here's where we're going to get a little problematic of his Livingston in, because we love him and I feel like if we keep saying yes about everyone, we're gonna be in a tough time. I'm looking through at my database. There's gonna be a lot of guys that we're gonna have a really tough time talking about.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say no right now. I don't think he's necessarily gonna have or I don't think he currently has, you know, the big time kind of pedigree for it. I really like him. I really like how he plays, especially on offense. I think there's a lot there to build on, and it wouldn't shock me if, you know, 4 months from now he's in. But currently, I'm going to say no.
I think the party started, everyone's having a good time, and then some people like Victor and some of the guys are just like, something feels wrong. Like, who's missing here? And they're like, oh crap, Chris, we forgot to invite Chris. And I think Chris is getting ready and he's trying to make a late dash to get to the club. But yeah, he's not in. He's on the way. He might hit traffic, but he's not in.
Yeah.
And I really like him. He's a good guy. Chris, good guy. We life of the party. Somehow his invite got, someone forgot to text him. He didn't make it in the group chat, but yeah, he's not there. He's not in.
All right, Rucker, you got anything else?
No, I mean, not really. You know, I feel like I'm feeding the addiction when it comes to film. And this is probably, we might look back in a couple of months, Metcalf, and be like, this was a terrible idea. Cause now all I'm doing is watching film till 3 a.m. and it's the second week of college basketball. But no, I'm excited. I was really pleasantly surprised with the Chris Livingston film. So I'm excited to keep watching through the rest of the class. I've started dipping my toe into some of these other guys. I'm actually really intrigued.
So who's exciting you? Or someone where you're like, oh, that's interesting.
I mean, I like Nolan Hickman, Strother, still going to get me in my feelings. Well, no, yeah, I mean, I'm going through my database right now. Kaluma, I'm going to have a really fun time talking about that episode, God, yes. I feel like, with you. Who was I just watching and I was getting intrigued with? Hold on, I'm going through my whole list. Sort of intrigued about Colby Jones from Xavier.
Hmm.
I had one that I wanted to bring up to you. Your boy Jed Howard.
Oh my god!
I feel like he's on my list coming up soon.
I'd be really excited to dive into his film because I was just kind of, when we were doing the Jairus Walker and Keontae George watches, is like he just kind of kept popping up doing really, really good stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch him a little bit closer. I'm trying to give some last couple names. Jalen Hood.
Schifino.
I was making you say it first. Maxwell gave us a little bit of like a, hey, I like this guy. And I feel like every time I kept watching his film, I liked his defense. I was a little impressed and he kept making some good passes and good decisions. I'm excited to watch him a little bit more. And then, Jaden Bradley for some reason.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
I love, he's going to be so much fucking fun at Alabama.
Jaden Bradley was the one guy. What team was he on? I don't know. IMG, what
with Kennedy, yes. And Jairus and Jet.
I said, who the heck is this guy? Yes. And I was like, where is he going? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, he's going to Bama. And then I was like, okay. And I don't know why, but I just like, that was a big circle. I was like, he just keeps popping, keeps getting my attention. So I'm excited to watch him a little closer. And then Nick Smith is like one of the top three to watch on my list soon. So I'm excited to watch all those guys. But yeah, what about you?
No, just a little embarrassing for me. When I was preparing for the Derek Whitehead episode, the first game I watched was the IMG, and I always listen with the sound off. Just prefer it that way.
I do the same way, so don't worry about it.
Didn't even register the colors of the jerseys, and Derek's number zero, Jaden Bradley's number zero, and the first 2 minutes, I'm like, God, Derek looks way fucking quicker than I remember. It's like, what is this? I'm like, oh, that's someone completely different. So I am watching the wrong guy. So it's like, all right, well, caught it early. And we're just going to put his name down because I am very excited to go revisit that film. But it's like, oh, God damn it.
No, I mean, it's funny how often that happens. Like, I'll start watching and then I get a little like, okay, like, that guy looks good. And then I'm like, okay, stop. Like, try to find a box score or something. Like, get the numbers down because, you know, you don't – sometimes when you're watching film, you don't get the immediate, like, starting lineup. And so
that's a sophomore. So
yeah. You're like, okay, I'll put him down for a way down. But, yeah, I mean, do you got anyone that you've been keeping an eye on or you're excited to watch?
I just – Jed Howard, I'm really excited to kind of dive in on. Jaden Bradley, really excited to dive in on. And then – Nolan Hickman and Arthur Kaluma are two of my favorite returners this year. And we'll have a whole episode on returners soon enough, but I can't remember if I said it on a pod or it may have just been one of our group chats or something. But my hot take is that if Nolan Hickman was at Kentucky last year instead of Ty Washington, Nolan Hickman would have been a top 20 pick.
I really, really like Hickman. I feel like me and Albert, we're in Vegas. We talked to someone in the program and they were all just raving and glowing about Hickman. They were all very, very excited. So I think that's going to be the one to watch this year. I know they got Malachi Smith is a transfer. I know there's some hype about him probably putting up some big numbers, but I think Hickman's going to still get the keys to the engine to let things can run right away, but I'm excited to watch him a lot. Mark Mitchell at Duke kept flashing when I watched him on tape too. So I'm excited to get into some of these guys. Now I'm getting pumped. But yeah, Jaden Bradley really got my attention. I was like, okay, that's funny though. The Derek Whitehead story. That's really good. I like that.
Yeah. Not my finest moment, but Rucker, this was a blast as always. Tell the people where they can find you.
NoCeilingsNBA.com. I'm gonna get some stuff rolling out. It's time to get the YouTube videos and some scouting videos up. I'm getting pumped for this year. It's time to go to work. I'm getting pumped. So I'm also on the Twitter at Tyler_Rucker. You want to talk some draft or prospects, just send me a little message. I'll either respond to you or just send a GIF. Metcalf, plug away. Thank you for, as always, sir.
Absolutely. Once again, I'm Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me on Twitter at TMetcalf11. You can find all of our No Ceilings merchandise at NoCeilingsNBA.BigCartel.com. You can find all of our written work at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's 100% free. Just click that subscribe button while you're there. You can follow us on Twitter at NoCeilingsNBA and on YouTube at NoCeilingsTV. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Until next time, see ya.